Hello and welcome to Untouched, the podcast from the Centre for Visual Cultures at Royal Holloway, University of London. In this podcast series, we will be delving into the themes of touch, tangibility and intangibility in engagements with art on an everyday basis, on trips to galleries, in curatorial practice, in artistic creation and in academic research. We will be asking what it means to physically interact with visual culture, what we can get from non-visual engagements with art, how the pandemic has changed our approach to artistic interplay, and what happens when we encounter the intangible and the unknown.
Hello, I'm Judith Medick, an Honorary Research Associate at the CVC, hosting this episode of the podcast. Today, I will be talking to Anne-Marie Purcell, Archives and Special Collections Curator here at Royal Holloway. Thank you so much, Anne-Marie, for joining us on this episode of the podcast. So first of all, can you please introduce yourself and tell us a bit about your background?
Well, hello, and thank you for having me. I am Anne-Marie Purcell. I'm the Archivist and Special Collections Curator here at Royal Holloway. So I started working in archives back in 2006, so about 16 years ago. And I started working as an information officer at the London Metropolitan Archives. And so I took this job on about a week after I finished my degree. So I took a degree in history at Royal Holloway. And so I was sort of inspired by my studies and wanted to continue learning as much as possible about history, and found that that job enabled me to do it. So
could I ask, what sort of history did you study?
I studied modern history. In my final year, one of the topics that I took was based on the Holocaust, and my dissertation was related to that. And in terms of the modules and things I took, they were mostly related to the 19th and 20th century, so fairly modern history, but it was all really interesting and really engaging.
Do you find that you use your history degree, or what you learnt on your history degree, in your current role?
Yeah, so generally through the 16 years that I've been an archivist, I've found that the 16 years that I've worked in archives, because I've been an archivist since I qualified in something like 2012. So generally, I feel that the skills that I developed during my degree, so particularly in terms of things like research and analytical skills, I could really use those to help researchers find the information they required at the London Metropolitan Archives, which basically housed loads of different collections based on different institutions across London. So it was really interesting, but requires a lot of knowledge. And in order to assist people, you need to be able to recall lots of different bits of information. So being able to learn and use my research skills that I developed while studying, I could assist other researchers. So yeah, I think generally, actually, the whole way through, I have really used my studies in my career.
So did you go straight into the archive, essentially, straight into archival work?
I did, yeah. So in 2006, when I graduated, that was when I became an information officer at London Metropolitan Archives. And so I worked there for about 5 years before I qualified as an archivist. And then I took on sort of more kind of cataloguing rather than public facing activities. And from there, I moved to a local authority to essentially kind of manage their archive service as a sole member or sole archivist, as often is the case in many local authorities. So that was at the London Borough of Hammersmith and Fulham. And from there, I moved on to a role as archivist at the University of West London, cataloguing a collection of materials relating to the history of Heathrow Airport. And I was there for about, it was really interesting, actually. It was a very much a mixed kind of collection of archives and museum objects. And a really great exhibition was created about the history of the airport out of the wider project. And I was there for 5 years, and I moved to the university here, so at Royal Holloway. And yeah, it's been really interesting to have different archive experience. So, you know, working at different institutions, they all work differently and they all have different collections. So I think it's given me a good kind of variety so far.
So delving into the archive at Royal Holloway, could you tell us what they actually consist of?
Sure. So Royal Holloway has a quite substantial archive, and the collections, I would say, are split into three. So there's the institutional archive, which is all of the history of Royal Holloway and Bedford College. And then the special collections, which are collections that have been acquired, which relate to the teaching at the colleges, and then also the rare books, so an interesting collection of unique and rare books we have as well. So in terms of the institutional archive, so this is created out of the records of Bedford College, and Bedford College originates from 1849, and also Royal Holloway, which originated in 1886. So in terms of institutional records, they're all kind of the typical institutional archive collection, where we have things like minutes, we have student records, we have principal's correspondence, premises plans and items relating to the buildings, and in particular Founders Building, which is a really interesting and iconic building on the campus, but also a really great collection of photographs. So many of these are of Founders Building, as I've just mentioned, but also show the students in the many kind of different activities that they would have been involved in the early 20th century. So yeah, it's a really mixed and varied range.
Do the photographs go back quite a long way?
They do, yeah. So the photos, there are some images, when I say images, there are some prints certainly of the opening of the college back in 1886. So they're really nice images to have. But yeah, they go back quite a long way. We have students' photo albums that have been donated, and many of those go back to the late 19th, early 20th century, so sort of turn of the century, I would say. But certainly the photos taken for Royal Holloway as the college itself, so its own photos, there are images in the collection that go right back to the very beginning, which are really nice. So nice drawings and images. So it's sorry, drawings and photographs, which is really, really interesting to look at.
What sort of drawings are they?
So they're mostly, I would say, mostly prints, really. There's a few prints. I think the majority of the kind of drawings and prints are in the art collection, really, and then the art collection contents would include some of the prints, which in terms of the stuff that's on Royal Holloway, actually quite a few things would be in the archive, but definitely there's more photos than prints and drawings, but there are some drawings within the collection, and they're mostly of the building and the location or the special event, like for example, we have some drawings of the opening of the college in 1886 by Queen Victoria, or drawings of the scene, you know, not particularly of Queen Victoria, but drawings of the scene of how the situation was on that particular event. So yeah, those are the kind of things that you'd find in the collection.
Could you also say a little bit more about the special collections?
Yes, definitely. Special collections are really interesting. So we have special collections which heavily feature theatre in them, which is really nice. So there are several really important theatre company collections, and these include the Gay Sweatshop Theatre, which existed from the 1980s, which included many different records relating to their work in improving gay rights or promoting gay rights, and also the Half Moon Theatre Company, who were a really radical and interesting theatre company originating from 70s onwards, where they had some international theatre companies come and perform, and the records, there were photos and programmes and posters and things that show that these productions were taking place at the Half Moon Theatre, which is really great to have. We have various other theatre companies as well, and some which are uncatalogued, including the Orange Tree Theatre, which is based in Richmond. So really, we have a broad range of materials within the special collections, but I must say theatre does feature heavily. So we also have some papers relating to, well, Alfred Sherman's papers. He was from the Centre of Policy, and he, sorry, Centre of Policy Studies, and he advised Margaret Thatcher in her time as in opposition. And those are quite interesting for people looking into that era and also into politics. There are also individuals closely connected to the college whose personal papers are kept within the special collections. And I would say as well, one other really interesting, really nice collection, but it is related to theatre, so obviously theatre is featured quite heavily, is a gentleman called Roy Waters, who collected theatre ephemera and memorabilia. And he collected photos, programmes, trade cards, letters. And so he was just an enthusiast. He's a former teacher and schools inspector. And this was his personal collection that he collected together. But so we have those as well. So yeah, it's a really nice, interesting collection.
And it sounds fascinating, but is everything on paper, or are there any recordings of the productions?
So the majority of the material is the 2D, sorry, paper-based collections. So things like letters, programmes, photographs are printed. But we do have for a few instances where there may have been oral history testimonies, we have some of those held digitally and online. And also where we create digital copies of things, we have those available online. When I say available, we have them stored online, not necessarily available externally. It's just that they're stored in our kind of drives that we keep all of our digital materials in. So we do have those. And then we, in terms of other formats, there are things like, but a rare instance, there are things like cassette, VHS, CD-ROM. But in terms of the performances, no, there aren't really any kind of recordings of those as such. It's very much the kind of admin and materials that are generated around those. So like the photos and the programmes and posters and things.
Yeah, so it still gives you a wonderful picture. You know, it gives the person a picture of how it all was.
Definitely, it definitely does. It shows that those performances were taking place, and then, you know, who was in them and where and the dates and that kind of thing. So it can give somebody a real, you know, picture of the theatre and what was happening at a certain time. So they are, you know, they're really useful still, and you definitely really important to keep around the actual performance. I mean, some of the theatre company collections will have things like scripts and stuff like that as well, which is always really key to keep too. So yeah, there's a real mixed variety of records that we have in the special collection.
So how do people actually access the archives?
So the archives are accessible to anyone, whether student, staff or external researcher. And in order to access the material, there is a process by people have to make an appointment in order to come in and actually come in person and view the material in the archive reading room. So in terms of how to access and who can access, as I've mentioned, it really is anybody, but students and staff are kind of the more frequent users of the collection, particularly in things like teaching. So we try and incorporate it where we can and in as much as possible the archive into as many courses where students can benefit from actually using and seeing the material in the archive reading room.
And when people actually come into the archive, do you find that they physically want to touch the materials? And are they able to do that? I mean, presumably with white gloves on, or?
Yes, it's a good question. So when people come in to view the material, there is an element that they need to touch it in order to be able to use it. So where they have requested to view, and I should point out, there is a catalogue online which describes all of the documents that are available, and they would need to consult that first in order to identify material, and then in the whole obtaining an appointment process, they'd let me know what they want and then I'd make it available on the day. But when they come in, they will need to actually, say for example, they receive a volume or they've selected a volume they need to see, they'll need to turn the page, they'll need to hold it, they'll need to possibly even take it out of a box. So there's a lot of physical interaction with the documents. And you know, there is this image that a lot of people have white gloves on when handling any kind of historical documents and materials. And I'd say for like extremely rare, extremely old, very valuable materials, that probably is still the case where white gloves are needed. But in terms of turning pages for documents while you're researching, sometimes using a glove or having gloved fingers is not always the best thing, because actually it takes away the ability to turn the page successfully. And also, as long as photos are kept in a Mellanex sleeve, which protects them, that means that the users can look at photos without handling them, so they don't necessarily need to use gloves to handle them. There may be times where users really want to use their own, to want to use a pair of gloves, whether that's plastic or the white cotton, due to the how dirty some of the material is, because some of it can be extremely dirty. Things with red rot where covers are deteriorating, that can be quite an unpleasant feeling on your hands and can be quite dirty, and they may actually decide, I want to wear gloves. So, you know, it all really depends on the document and what they're using, but generally there is a fair amount of actual interaction and touch with the documents themselves.
And do you find people get something out of touching the documents, whether it's actually touching them themselves or whether through a sleeve, for example?
I think there definitely is a lot to be said for the physical, actually picking up the photo, even in the Mellanex sleeve, as opposed to viewing it on a screen, if it's a duplicate digital copy or a photocopy of it that's just been printed off. You know, having the photo there with its kind of shiny surface in an even shinier Mellanex sleeve, there's something about actually seeing it itself in front of you and picking it up or leafing through the photos, obviously in the Mellanex sleeve, which makes it quite exciting, quite different to flicking through something online and in terms of digital copies. And people really do want to, when they come to an archive, they've made the effort to actually say, well, I'm going to go and view some historical materials. So I think people really do want to see the original. There's often the case where a surrogate is available, whether that's a digital version or even a microfilm or microfiche version, not only due to like technological reasons. People generally are sometimes very disappointed actually that they can't view the original, and sometimes they can't for the reasons of conservation. The document may be in such poor state that they can't view it and hold it and do all the things that they would normally do with a document that wasn't in that condition. Or sometimes there may be other reasons. You know, if something's handled, we expect a lot of use of something, then we create a surrogate so that they're not constantly handled, because generally handling does over time deteriorate, even the most small amount would deteriorate documents. But there is a lot to be said for actually going in and viewing it and getting that feeling, smelling the smell off an old document, feeling the different materials that are used that were used in the days gone by to record, in terms of things like volumes of and things like vellum and parchment and other different mediums for like written records. So I think people really do get a lot of actually seeing the real thing, the physical thing, as opposed to a copy.
And the smell, the sense of smell is important at this point.
Yeah, I think so. I think the sense of smell sort of possibly might make a reader feel like they are handling something that's extremely old and rare and unique, and this is a really different and interesting experience and something that they don't necessarily get all the time. You know, it's quite interesting and different for them. So I think the smell does give that feeling, because there are a lot of documents that may have been stored in places that are that were smoky, or that have this kind of old, I don't know how to describe it, but just like an old smell. And some of the red rot, and a red rot on documents has a very distinctive smell when the covers and bindings are deteriorating. So yes, that's something which I think a lot of people, it adds to the experience along with the touch and the visual as well.
I can imagine. So another aspect of the conversation on visual culture is, of course, that of that which we can't touch, or the inaccessible, the intangible, and the unseen indeed. So thinking about this, are there any gaps or unknowns in the archives or the special collections that you're aware of, that you're, well, that you're trying to become aware of indeed?
Yeah, so as you just mentioned, I'm quite early in my role as Archives and Special Collections Curator at Royal Holloway, so it's difficult to know if there are glaring gaps. However, I think many institutes, or many similar sort of higher education institutional archives, possibly lack representation of the student body and the student voice. So I think this is something that the collections generally might benefit from in the future, in terms of collecting more material, or collecting material that relates especially to the students and their experiences. Having said that, there are quite a few documents within Royal Holloway and Bedford Archives, which give a really good understanding and represent students, particularly in the early years, probably compared to many other institutions, I'd say, just simply because the photo collection, I think, is really, really interesting and really useful, and gives lots of different situations that students have taken photos in that gives a real good picture of student life. So, yeah, there is that. I mean, there is also gaps in terms of digitisation. So I think, as in the last couple of years, a lot of organisations of archives have realised that actually digitisation would be really key to reaching remote users and widening the audience to their collections and enabling as much access as possible. And there are a couple of digital collections online, but then one of them is the letters of Elizabeth Jessa Reed, who is one of the founders of Bedford College, and those are relatively unknown, I suppose, but we could really do with getting more of our really interesting documents digitized and available for remote users. And one way we could do that is to have some kind of digital asset management system, which unfortunately we don't have at the moment, but that could maybe connect to our catalogue and make it easier for people to find stuff and be able to use the collections online remotely. So, yeah, I think those are the gaps that I think we would like to sort of really fill in terms of how digital and how we use the material, and then also in terms of collecting in the future.
Sounds great. So to finish, I have some short and sweet questions. And they are, firstly, what is your favourite piece of visual culture in the collection?
So I've said this before, but I love the photo collection, and I've mentioned it several times. But both the Bedford and Royal Holloway photo collections have really great images. And as I've mentioned, many show early student life. And my favourite of them has to be images of students in drama performances. So they had a theatre group called, Royal Holloway had a theatre group called Chard. This is in the early 20th century, and we have albums of photos of a variety of the performances that they put in. And many of them kind of had a classics theme. I just love the costumes used, the poses that they were in to show a particular scene that was happening in the play when they took that photo. I think they're wonderful, and they're definitely my favourite piece of visual culture in the collection.
Is it charred like the vegetable?
Yes, yeah, Chard. So I believe it's a play on Royal Holloway drama, so something. It's an acronym, but I believe it is.
And has it affected your, or enhanced your relationship with the building at all, seeing those photos? I mean, I presume they're set in and around the campus.
Yes, certainly. So, for example, with the Founders Building, there's a set of steps that go into the woodland. And many of the photos feature these steps, but also various part of Founders Building. So to actually walk around Founders and think, oh, yeah, I recognise that bit of Founders because it was in a photo that I'd seen in this album, is actually quite special. And you can sort of just imagine the performers in those performances posing for their photos, and sort of standing draped across the steps or something, and it just is a really nice thing to be able to see the two things at the same time, so the old and the new, well, the present. So yeah.
Yes. And so moving away from Royal Holloway, probably, what is your favourite piece of visual culture more widely, i.e., in the world?
So my favorite piece of visual culture is a set of maps. I've always really enjoyed looking at these maps. So the London bomb damage maps, and basically they are 1916 Ordnance Survey maps of the entire county of London area, because they were created by the London County Council, and they've been coloured in with different colours to show levels of bombing. So very light colour to show just a few windows smashed, and very dark to show like lots of destruction, and we know from air raid reports how much destruction there were. And I just think that these are really interesting. They also show like the V1 and V2 bombs that landed, and this was all during the Second World War in the Blitz. They're very informative, but yet they're so interesting to look at in terms of London and the streets, and recognizing streets and then thinking, hang on, there was this damage, oh, that building doesn't exist because of this or that. And I just think they're a really interesting resource to use, and that they would be my favorite piece of visual culture. Technically it's visual culture, but that's my favorite thing to look at. So
Yeah, sure. Are they in London? Are they presumably accessible in London?
yeah, so going back to where I started in archives, they're available at the London Metropolitan Archives, and yeah, they're that's where they are. They're there, and I believe they may be online in some way, so wider access is possible, which is great. But yeah, they are available.
They sound great. Finally, is there anything you'd like to make us aware of with regards to any upcoming projects or plans for the future? I mean, perhaps, I don't know if you have any plans in terms of multi-sensory activities at all.
Just thinking about the touch and smell, I've worked on a project with students looking into dementia care, and we selected some museum objects and also some archives from the Heathrow collection at the University of West London, where I previously worked, to create kind of a suitcase of memories for people to touch, feel, and look at. And the involved in that whole program was also the look at the at smell as well, and also sound in terms of music. So in terms of looking at how memories can be stimulated in people living with dementia by using some of these in terms of smell, sound and touch, and also the visual, and seeing how this kind of multi-sensory project, how this could how they could work out therapies to assist people living with dementia. And I think this is something which is quite interesting, and something I'd like to maybe look out into in the future. And in terms of how it could be used at Royal Holloway, well, there's lots of different departments that we'd like to work with. We typically, as with many archives, work with the humanities department, but in terms of looking at a multidisciplinary, it would be interesting to see if there are any other kind of departments we could work with in order to look into this kind of thing and how this could be used in the future. But in terms of other projects, we also I've mentioned before, we're looking into digital asset management for the collections, and preserving as much as possible that we have digitally, because obviously everything we create now is going to be digital, and making sure that everything we have is preserved and available for future generations. Yeah, so that's yeah, we've been involved in student placement recently, curating diversity, and yeah, we've got lots of things going on.
Thank you, Anne-Marie, for joining me on the podcast.
Well, thank you for asking me to take part. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Untouched. All the information you need to find out more about us, the Centre for Visual Cultures, is linked in the episode notes. If you have any thoughts or questions on what we've discussed today, email us at centreforvisualcultures@rhul.ac.uk or tweet us at @RHUL_CVC. This podcast is produced by the Royal Holloway Centre for Visual Cultures, located in the Languages, Literatures and Cultures Department at Royal Holloway. Edited by myself, Anna, with music by Gaspar Senna. See you next time.